And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz of the Radio On Air console. I still haven't come up with my thing.
You do not have the best words.
I don't have a thing.
No.
The words will come, though. I hope. I really hope.
Yeah, no. We really need to have the best words on this radio
show. If you want to come up with a thing for me, send it to me and I'll say it at the beginning of the show.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live anytime online. Just go to cfru.ca, click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will be talking about the Ontario budget, which came down this time last Thursday, and considering its bold proposals like the not exactly free tuition and the cap and trade program, how does Kathleen Wynne and her government introduce its spendiest budget one year and balance it the next? We will talk about that. And then a community group has sounded an alarm about mental health cases in relation to the local hospitals, including our own Guelph General Hospital. The city is currently looking for ways to fund an ER expansion, and while that's important, this report suggests that crisis is closer at hand. And finally, it's been almost a week since the ceasefire began in Syria. We'll look at the tenuous peace that's been achieved and look at the ongoing plight of Syrian refugees, of whom there are now 25,000 in Canada, as promised. But first, and this is a major topic, Tuesday was Super Tuesday. That was the 12 primaries in the United States. 11 states plus American Samoa voted for their party's nominee for president. All the voters in those areas, I should say, voted for their party's nominee for president. I have no idea where to begin. I'll start with the latest, though. And
I was going to say start with American Samoa. Who won that?
I would have to... I don't know.
There's only like 200 delegates or something in America. It's an interesting story as to why they're even on the list. But
that's true.
Protectorate. They're a protectorate, right?
Isn't Let's that? Be honest. No one cares about American Samoa.
I'm going to go there if I get a chance.
Okay, today, just to give you the latest, Mitt Romney, who was the presidential candidate in 2012 for the Republicans, came out today and denounced Trump, encouraged Republicans to get behind somebody else. He was very nonspecific as to who.
Anybody. It was like 2 minutes hate, wasn't it? It was just a big hate on.
It was more like 10 minutes of hate.
Was it 10?
Donald Trump rebutted. This afternoon, saying, and I quote, I could have said, quote, Mitt, drop to your knees, he would have dropped. And this is in reference to Mitt Romney getting Trump's endorsement in 2012. And more specifically, Donald Trump was referencing a, shall we say, sexual act.
Yes.
That he could have... gotten Mitt Romney to perform on him in favor of, in exchange for his endorsement. So this is the front runner for president of the United
States.
He just
says these wild, wild things. And somebody was saying the other day, I was like, did you know that Donald Trump doesn't have a speechwriter? I was like, it's pretty clear. If it isn't clear to you that Donald Trump doesn't have a speechwriter, then there's something wrong. You think about it, though. There was a time where comments such as Trump's, like, and he's saying these things daily. There was a time where, like, even any one of those things that he had said would derail somebody. Look at Howard Dean. He did that sort of, like, cowboy yell, yee-haw. Pretty minor stuff, right? And supposedly that just completely derailed him.
Yep.
Trump is, no, you know, filter? What filter? There is no filter. He's just a guy saying stuff over and over again. And I love, there was some great analysis. I can't remember what I heard. It was in the radio or whatever. They were talking to people on the street in London about Trump in general, just to see, you know, get a European or a different opinion. And this one woman was like, Trump is bonkers. I'm like, that sums it up. Like, she's right. Trump is bonkers. And somebody else was like, he's a charlatan. I'm like, wow, yeah, this is just people walk around, have very eloquent things to say about Trump, probably far more eloquent than stuff he comes up with just doing the rant. Yeah, Romney was like, he called him a phony, he's a fraud, he's dishonest, you know, and add whatever adjectives you like. but yet he keeps winning. Oh my goodness, win, win, win. Now, mind you, he only had, like, the major win he had, I think, was Massachusetts, right? But then other than that, it was sort of, they were kind of close. Like, he took Massachusetts about 50%, but the other ones, it's like the other right. two, Rubio and Cruz, is kind of neck and neck, and Rubio finally wins one.
Minnesota.
Little Marco, as Donald calls him, finally won one. Like, and but this is what it's become, that Rubio has sunk to the level now. And, like, some of the stuff he's saying about the spray on tan and all these personal attack things, it was just getting ridiculous, like schoolyardy.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's not just stooping to the level, but, you know, the level is very low, and it's somewhere below. We're below ground at this point in terms of, like, how low can you go?
Right.
So it doesn't fare well for Rubio, I don't think. I mean, but he's tanking. I mean, you know, you win one state. If anybody's going to be Cruz, but.
You know what's weird is watching Marco Rubio, like, read Trump's tweets and, you know, comment on his spelling, you know, I was like, yeah, like, go for it. Like, what do you have to lose at this point?
Yeah, like, get the mall club out and start beating.
Take the Mickey out. And when the last debate, which I think was last Thursday, where Rubio was, like, attacking him on his policies and, like, saying, like, give us, like, some hard and fast, don't just get up there and say, yeah, I'm going to make stuff great. Yeah. You're yada-yadding over your policy. You got to, you know, it's not enough to say, here's the problem. It's going to be awesome when I'm done. What's the steps in between? There is that. I mean, that's a level of logic that is completely getting trounced in this scenario. And the thing about watching the Romney speech is, like, he's making some really good points, like, about all of Trump's. He has this reputation of being this awesome businessman, but he listed every Trump
failure. Did he miss
Trump thing? Airlines, Trump vodka, Trump mortgages, Trump steaks, Trump University, which he's being sued for, and it looks like the lawsuit is going ahead on that.
That's the one Rubio keeps bringing up, right? The university.
Well, it's in the news right now because there's an actual lawsuit out about it. You know, he's being sued for millions because, you know, people are paying like $35,000 to get their picture taken next to a cardboard cutout of Trump. So, I mean, it's we can laugh, but it's a pretty serious fraud situation if you really think about it. And on top of it all, with Trump, yeah, I mean, it seems to have I can't believe it, but the controversy which came up on Sunday, which was on the talk show on CNN and wouldn't disavow the KKK and David Duke, that almost seems to have completely been taken off the front page and in favor of all these latest, these latest acts, these latest lines. And of course, the the picture of the week, of course, is on our. I put it on our website for the show today. Yeah. That picture of hostage Chris Christie, you know, looking like a deer caught in the headlights, and of course, that's become a meme in and of itself. And he had to come out and defend himself today about it, like, no, I am not a hostage. Like, he actually had to come out and say that. I am not a hostage. And, you know,
the puppet master is controlling his hand right up. Yeah.
Right. Like, he's having to explain himself about, you know, how 2 weeks ago he was as anti-Trump as anyone. And this week he's, you know, Ed McMahon to Trump's Carson, pretty much.
Or the Colonel Klink one was pretty funny too. Somebody posted that on my timeline. I was like, that's pretty accurate. But yeah, it's what we're seeing with Clinton and Sanders is kind of a classic battle, right? Mm-hmm. But the Republican one, which is what everybody is talking about, and it sounds like a lot of Republicans are repulsed by the whole thing too. Beyond Romney, it's like they don't like Cruz. Rubio's failing. Trump is like completely out of control, and I think we're potentially going to see like the implosion at least of the Republican Party. There's talk of that. It's just like this whole thing is completely falling apart. But there's also the darker side to it over the past couple of days. I mean, a couple of things was those – I mean, the protesters getting kicked out was one thing, the Black Lives Matter protesters. But I think it was in Arizona as well. Time Magazine guy getting choked was one of them. He got clobbered by a Secret Service guy, right?
Yeah.
Presumably a Secret Service guy. But there was about 30 students, all black, were escorted out for being black. They had no banners or anything. They were just at the back watching what was going on, and they got kicked out.
Mm.
And that's like you're going to a place where it's, you know, everything that they're saying about you on the other channels, including ours, if you listen to Democracy Now, is probably true. Like, if it's come to this, if you know, you're going to base it on just crazy talk, hatred, saying whatever you like, no speech writer, no plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's pushing anarchy, as far as I'm concerned. Not the good kind of anarchy. We're talking, like, the out-of-control robots take over because you humans are useless kind of thing. But he keeps winning. He keeps winning. And Hillary, we should probably talk about the Democrats a bit, too. We're focusing a lot on Republicans, but...
Well, a couple of things.
It's looking like Hillary.
It's hard to not say Hillary, but one of the things I'll point out before we go to Hillary and Bernie, even the small things, like the small things are getting missed, right? Michael Hayden, a former head of the CIA, I almost said he was a former head of the CSA, but that's not right. CIA and NSA.
Head of Spectre, yeah.
He was, he's a guy who knows his foreign policy and, you know, how government works, says on the Bill Maher show last Friday, and he repeated it again on Fareed Zakaria's show, but he says Trump cannot seriously expect the U.S. armed forces to do things like torture worse than waterboarding or kill the families of terrorists. He said the U.S. armed forces will refuse to carry out those orders, which paints a really serious picture. If there's a commander-in-chief in office whose orders are so outlandish that the United States military might not even follow them, and despite what he and Cruz and Rubio and everyone say, we're talking about the most powerful military on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then today... Club for Growth, huge Republican booster in terms of fundraising, says they will not give money to Republican congressional candidates who support Trump.
Yeah, and for everything that's been said about Ted Cruz, Cruz is the one that said Trump as the Republican candidate means a Hillary Clinton presidency. And I think that's prescient stuff. I think he's probably right.
I think a Cruz nomination means a Hillary presidency.
Well, that's probably true.
I mean, there's like you were saying, the numbers are pretty pretty weirdly divided. I mean, Trump has the majority, but it's a minority majority. And, if that's going to carry on through the next several months, I mean, there's two big states coming up on the 15th, Florida and Ohio. And if that splits Kasich and Rubio, who are both tied to those states because that's where they're from, you're talking about a very divided party. And, of course, Trump hasn't ruled out a third party run, even though he signed a pledge saying, I rule out a third party run. So he could go his own way. But the people who support Trump are not going to support the Republican nominee. And this is where we'll get into the Democratic race is Trump's supporters. If Trump goes, his supporters will go with him. They're there for Trump. They're not there for the Republicans. Versus what you see going on in the Democratic Party. Yeah, there's a pretty good split between Bernie and Hillary right now. But if Hillary is the nominee, the Bernie people are probably going to be voting for Hillary not for Bernie. What's interesting is the enthusiasm gap. You know, we're seeing a reverse 2008 right now where Republicans are coming out in droves to vote in their primaries, Democrats not so much. So the danger, I think, is more of a 2010 situation where left and progressive and Democratic people stay home and don't go out and exercise their vote.
Well, I mean, I think they will kind of rally the troops. There is the fringe, let's say, that follows Sanders.
Yeah.
People like me who can't necessarily vote for him, but would in a heartbeat, for sure. And, of course, all the stars, let's say, that have gotten behind him. But I think, when it comes down to the crunch, mm-hmm. they will back Hillary and maybe even Sanders. I don't know who her potential vice presidential candidates are. I don't think it'll be Sanders.
I would doubt
it's
it.
It's highly unlikely, but there's lots to choose from. And then, of course, there's the at least for the Democrats, the superdelegate factor, which will be interesting. So, but anyway, all that aside, I think Sanders said he's sticking it out till the convention. Was it June or July? The Democratic convention?
I don't think it's till September even.
Oh, really? I don't. So he's in it for the long haul. So, I mean, will keep that race interesting.
The primaries wrap in like June, but the convention isn't until...
Oh, it's a bit later? Because that's when they're anointed, really, at that point, right?
Right. Well, typically, officially, you know, the way it's gone in the last several years is after Super Tuesday, the writing's on the wall, and it's just a matter of
you're supposed to drop out, or whatever,
right? Getting
the
right
not leaving. I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
There's lots of people just sort of hanging around, eh? Kasich.
Well, yeah, and the only person who's given signs of dropping out after Super Tuesday has been Carson on the Republican side, and even he's like,
nobody attacked him, so he decided to leave.
Oh yes.
Somebody attack me, please. I was like, I'll attack you, Ben.
You know what? If he didn't say ludicrous things like, I'd go by the fruit salad of their lives.
Oh, that's going to become like immortal, I think.
I think people would be more inclined to attack him. But, you know, if you're talking to Ben Carson, you're probably going to get fruit salad or pyramids or grain silos or Lord knows what.
I wouldn't want brain surgery from him. I want them to talk to somebody who had brain surgery from him and see, like, if they're okay.
Yeah, there should be a Yelp.
The fruit salad of your brain.
Brain surgeons.
I think so.
Yeah. Like there should be some sort of review system.
Shouldn't be too critical. I mean, because supposedly he was very good, but
yeah,
when you hear him talk, you think, how is that remotely possible?
Unless he's
I'm
going
to read his bio. Not the bio, but somebody's going to write an unauthorized bio about him. I'll read that one.
Well, unless he's like
a savant of some kind?
Kind of savant where, you know, he's really good at brain surgery, but not so good at, you know, explaining himself politically anyway.
That's definitely true.
Anyway, we'll probably revisit this again. And we're going to move on to Ontario budget. The budget was dropped this time last week, like I said. And breaking news here, the federal budget is going to be dropped on March the 22nd because they just sent out a notice that the media lockup is going to start at 9 a.m. on March the 22nd. So they're gonna drop it that day. I don't think that's been heard before.
And we're going to start a rap group, and our first song will be Drop the Budget.
Drop the Budget. I don't think anyone wants us to start a rap group.
Well, you never know.
That's just me.
Anyway. See what the people say.
Anyway, Ontario budget. The Ontario budget, $133.9 billion in new spending, which is an all-time record. And this, of course, at a time when you would think, theoretically, spending would be capped or cut or reined in because the Liberals have promised to balance the budget by next year. Now, in their defense, the projected deficit for this year is $4.3 billion, which is the smallest it's been in quite some time, so they seem to be chipping away at it. I think we're all curious to know if there's maybe some kind of mathematician work going on behind the scenes. But the big
there
news...
There always is.
But the big news was, quote-unquote, free tuition. Of course, it wasn't free tuition. What they're talking about is...
It's like a free lunch.
Yeah, pretty much. But
it doesn't exist.
But what it is, they're talking about consolidating all these loan programs and all these grant and scholarship programs. And you still have to meet the $3,000 threshold, which is you yourself or your parents or whoever's helping you pay through school. For your school or yourself through your part-time job, if you don't have help from parents, you have to have that $3,000 threshold before it kicks in. Now, it does seem like when it comes to getting loans, you will not be having to take out as much loans anymore, which is a good thing. But it's not free tuition. I think that's kind of been lost in the shuffle and a lot of the discussion.
Yeah, as Liz Sandals was saying, the system was blown up, which is an interesting way to put it, because there's all these different channels of money. And it sounds like – and it's probably a good idea to consolidate it, that it's just going to be it's this. If you make this much, it's this. And if you make more than that, it's not this. Now, how they're going to sort that out, we will see. It's kind of like how are they going to sort out the what programs – are going to exist from the cap and trade, which is another big ticket thing that's come down. Mm-hmm. They're hoping to raise, what was the total, Adam? 1. Something billion? 1.9.
Which is about $600 million more than they originally said.
But it sounds like it's going to be dedicated to what they're calling green programs, but they're not really. I couldn't find what that was, actually. They didn't say we're going to do this. It's not going to be we're going to have solar panels on every block.
No, it's not specific.
It's just.
Anything that's green-ish, like public transit.
Yeah, free-ish tuition and green-ish green stuff.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with it, is that they're going to generate this revenue. And, of course, the problem with that is when there's a chunk of money sitting there.
Yeah.
They're not sure what it's going to do. The temptation is far too great to go after it. And I think this has been implied by the conservatives and kind of right-wing types in terms of, you know, that money is really a tax. And it is sort of a tax. They're not calling it a tax, but...
Technically, taxes don't get support anymore, so you can't call something.
If you're putting, you know, however many cents on gas and however 3.3 on what is it, natural gas cubic meter?
Yeah,
it's a tax, really. It's sort of like that one that we're supposed to pay down the debt of Ontario Hydro, which ain't happening either. and this is the thing though: if they do sort of head towards that, you know, zero deficit, there's still a $300 billion debt. And it seems that 40% of like what our economic activity is in Ontario per year just goes to servicing that.
Yeah, it's a bigger line item than like healthcare.
Is the interest something like $11 billion? They're just paying you're just paying the interest on this money. So of course the whole idea is to reduce that. That's obviously not gonna happen with this budget or probably subsequent budgets. Were there any bright spots? I don't know. It sounds like there's going to be more money going to hospitals. We're going to talk about that in a bit, actually. $345 million. And, of course, the hospital-based organizations like the Ontario Nurses, doctors, everybody sees that as sort of a bit of a bright light. But there's more to that story. And like I said, we're going to talk about that in a bit. There's certain things that were cut, one of which was the drug deductible for the seniors. It was sort of it sounds like the more wealthy seniors are going to be paying for the poorer ones.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in my perfect world, pharmacare is free and university tuition is actually free. This is sort of like it's free-ish. You should have said free-ish because that sort of sums it up a bit better.
Of course, there was an outrage of
who was outraging
from seniors.
Oh, of course.
About the deductible going up.
Yeah.
And Kathleen Wynne in an announcement seemed to indicate that might be walked back. Although it's worth pointing out,
you're going to lose some votes, Kathleen.
Well, she doesn't want to lose votes, but of course, like at $170, that's still half the price of the next cheapest province. I'll just point that out.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's very good. Having seen lots of seniors' medication lists in the past few years,
right?
It all adds up. So whatever you can get is probably a good thing. And I heard one comment too that there was a bit of electioneering going on in this budget. I didn't really see that. Did you? Did you get a feeling that it was sort of like this is sort of the lead into by exactly when the budget's due in 2018, we're going to have...
A bit early for election.
It is. I thought that too, but...
We're only halfway... I mean, we'll be halfway through the mandate in May. In May. So it seems a bit early for this kind of stuff. Of course, they may be playing a long game too, because next year they have the Ontario Retirement Plan on deck, which is going to be another spendy item. Plus, they have to balance the budget next year.
Or else we'll kick them out. No.
Well, I mean, they don't have to. Like, they haven't, like, passed a law or anything. But, I mean, they made a pretty big deal in the last election about, like, we're going to balance it by 2018. So, I mean, if they want to keep – I mean, that's going to be electioneering. An example of electioneering there, like if they can keep the deficit or if they can eliminate the deficit, then yeah, that will definitely be electioneering because of keeping promises and trying to make it look that they're fiscally responsible going into the 2018 election.
Well, and they did do a couple of things that I think they're trying to be able to point to something and say, look, this actually went up, one of which was the $25 a month for Ontario Works people and the rate hike for the OSDP people on disability. But the problem, and I think it was a percent and a half. The problem with some of these, actually with all these kinds of hikes, they can say it went up, but if it's not sort of indexed to inflation and everything else, the price is going higher on everything, food, you name it. It really needs to be more in those areas. I mean, and that's not to say that people who are on those programs would say, oh, please don't give me the money. Mm-hmm. But this is the thing. It's just sort of they're doing these little incremental things. It's like, look, well, it actually went up. But, you know, there's other things that have gone up, like unemployment, child poverty, you know, the usual things I focus on. But you know what I'm saying? It's like you get these big – there is a bit of a – not even a bait and switch, but sort of like a bit of a, you know, big shiny thing. Free tuition. Everybody's talking about the free tuition, but then there's all these little things you say, you know what? That's actually a cut. That's actually a cut. This isn't improved at all.
Well, I didn't hear anything about public education, like in terms of the, you know, the public school system. Of course, we just came off a huge labor negotiation in those regards too. So maybe that's something I want to leave alone for a while. Healthcare, though, is you point out that there's a 1.8% increase in healthcare spending, but that's actually in keeping with the rate of inflation. So there isn't actually a whole lot of new healthcare spending. They're just kind of basically keeping pace with what there is now, which is why you're seeing a ton of commercials on the air about
from the doctors.
Yeah, the doctors and the nurses associations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that money comes from things that are cut, right? It's not as if there's new money. It's more of a shuffle, right? Because they have, well, again, we're going to talk about it a bit, but they've been laying off healthcare professionals, lots of them. Lots of them, but again.
And it's kind of on the QT, I guess. It gets reported, but it doesn't, there doesn't seem to be like a big thing made out of it, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, when you see these commercials now, they seem to be every other minute on TV when you're watching TV. But
because we are the last two people to watch TV. Everybody watches the internet now.
Well,
or listens to the radio on.
That's the curious thing is you hear them all over TV. You see them all over TV, and there's also radio ads too. But
yeah,
you know,
well, it's demographic, right? It's targeted at certain people.
Yeah,
those that are slightly older than us. And one of my favorite things to come out of this was the, I happen to be, got hold of the Sun. I don't buy it, but I do read it if it's lying around. And one of the articles was like, you know, the wine tax and the cigarette tax. That's like a throwback to the old, you know, they used to call them the sin taxes. Like, oh, the wine's going up and the cigarettes are going up. I honestly don't think anybody cares about that anymore, whether the wine and cigarettes go. They care more about gas and diesel going up, but you know the cigarettes are going up price. Everybody's kind of like, whatever. Well, the wine's going up. Well, whatever.
You know, it's the thing with the gas is the extra 4.3 cents on gas. I mean, it's shrewd to do it now that gas is so cheap, rather than doing it like when gas is $1.20 a liter or $1.30 a liter. So I mean, it's pretty shrewd to do it right now. But yeah, I mean, nobody ever lets her. You know, occasion to complain about taxes slides. So.
I wonder if that little pie chart at the when you're filling up that has the breakdown will have sort of carbon tax broken down in the pie as well.
Oh, probably.
Because according to the gas companies, they don't make any money. It's all tax. They make it sound like on a sounds like on a liter they make 2%, maybe sometimes it's 1%, and then everything else is just tax. So, I think there's a bit of pie charts
math magician.
Pie chart spin going on there.
Yeah. No, it's definitely that. And, of course, there's the First Minister's Conference going on right now in Vancouver, and Brad Wall comes out and says, like, well, no, he says...
I should have kept my UGG to myself.
He says, well, we can't talk about carbon tax right now. Gas is so low. And it's one of those arguments where you have people come out saying, we can't talk about carbon tax when prices are low. Can't talk about carbon tax when prices are high. I mean, Harper did this not this past Christmas, the last Christmas he was prime minister. It's like, well, when, you know, it's good, we can't talk about it because we're hurting the industry. When it's bad, we can't talk about it, it's hurting the industry. So it's, I mean, you got to kind of pick one. Anyway.
I think Harper and Brad are chums.
Well.
Probably.
it's hard to say how chummy they are considering Stephen Harper is reenacting The Fugitive right now. So.
Yeah, maybe they just hang out at the club. Wherever that is.
Anyway.
Calgary somewhere. It's in Calgary.
Yeah. Anyway.
Secret handshakes and all that, yeah.
We're going to take a break. Speaking of tunes, we're going to play some music, do some PSAs, and then we'll be right back with more discussion here on open source as well. If you're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, 250 watts of community power. We'll be right back.
as Krusty the Clown would say, what the hell was that?
That was the worker and parasite of musical selections.
It definitely was. And I chose it because it is Taxman by the Beatles, or Taxwoman in the case of Ontario, by somebody called Fred Longbird Holm, from an album that you will never ever buy or hear of called Downtown Does the Beatles Live at the Knitting Factory, which is in Brooklyn. I think it was before Brooklyn was super hip. It was just somewhat hip. We go listen to Worker and Parasite on viola, 1992. So this is a classic CD in the station. CDs weren't very old when this arrived at the station some 25 years ago. It's all busted up. And that's probably the last you'll ever hear of that. But anyway.
Thankfully.
I think my explanation was longer than we played in this. So we'll never play that again. If you have some music that you think would suit us and you wanted to hear, let us know via the regular channels, and we will gladly entertain any requests, because that was Greg Shirk requested that song in an election many moons ago, and we never played it. So perhaps we'll play the real one of these days. Next year. Next budget.
Well, there's another budget in a couple of weeks, so.
Well, George Harrison was talking about a 95% tax rate in that song, so anyway. But that guy in viola, I don't know what the hell he was doing. Anyway.
Whatever happens in a couple of Tuesdays from now, I don't think a 95% tax rate is going to be a part of it. Anyway.
Sanders.
So this kind of was under the radar, but I mean, it goes along with a collection of issues that are going on at the Guelph General Hospital. A group called Waterloo Wellington Local Health Integration Network says that our emergency room here in Guelph is being brought to a standstill because the emergency room just isn't equipped to deal with people having mental health problems. And it's really quite staggering because about 10 to 11 patients come in requiring inpatient admission, and there's no place to put them, like literally no place to put them. You can call to Homewood. Homewood has emergency intake services. But, and this is a quote from Homewood, they are not always able to respond promptly. And what this means is 95% of the patients who come into the emergency room in mental distress, and if they are admitted to the hospital on Saturday, sometimes have nowhere to go until Monday. So that's like over like 36 hours, 36 to 48 hours, they're just kind of chilling out in the emergency room waiting for somewhere to go. And this is becoming a bigger problem because the number of mental health cases come into the emergency room at the hospital has gone from 1,800 in 2011 to 2,700 in 2014. And this isn't a Guelph problem alone. They looked at all the hospitals in the area. Fergus, Mount Forest, Palmerston also had similar issues. And they are not, of course, as jurisdictions not nearly as equipped as Guelph. And if you think about Guelph General Hospital, it's pretty lucky because, you know, Homewood is right across the road.
Yeah, and that's more coincidence, or not coincidence, but just the way things evolve more than
fate.
Anything.
Yeah.
And I think people need to realize, too, that Homewood is a private operation. It's kind of grandfathered in. It does a lot of things, and it does a lot of things very well. And they have a special relationship, let's say, with the Ontario government and healthcare, and that they're sort of tied into OHIP and they get OHIP money, but that's not, it's just one of, it's like the shoal dice for hernias. It's been around for 100 years. Mm-hmm. They've just ended up incorporated into it. Now, there's plenty going on here. And those of you that know me and read my blog as well know that I've spent some time in the Emerge I've been there at least twice, two epic visits. And on one of them, it may have even been the exact night or the weekend that was the absolute meltdown in terms of crisis. And it was something to watch because I don't recall it being like that before. But there's a combination of due to the shooting, of which the SIU report is out. And I suppose that's another story. There's an increased security presence. And I guess police are always there as well. And there just seems to be this back and forth between people. Lots of waiting. Mm. We waited for a very long time. We weren't there for an emotional or mental health issue. But it was obvious that that was the key thing that was going on and causing the traffic jam, let's say. Mm-hmm. And it bothers me, one of the articles I read, they referred to these people, and I really hate when that tone is taken. I don't think there was any offense meant by that, but there really are two channels going on here in terms of people's needs in the ER. And from what I told, because I spent so much time there, you just end up talking, or at least I do, anyway, talking to the workers, what's going on. Funny enough, two of them were Rachel and Monica, which I thought was weird.
Oh, because of Friends?
Yeah, this is – I was like, okay, don't make the Friends joke. But they were all great. The staff – absolutely fantastic considering what they were going through as well as the people in the ER are going through, because it's clear that there needs to be some sort of cleaving off of the services. And I found a very interesting report. It was from the Canadian Journal of Psychiatry and it just came out. They did a study and they were saying that part of what's going on here is that younger people in particular are finding it difficult to find services, mental health services in the community. They have no family doctor, or the family doctor can't help them. It takes forever to get a psychiatrist. So it's like when all your cards on the table and it's falling apart, where do you go? You end up in the ER.
Yeah.
And
that could be said for a lot of things too.
Sure, but like, because there are people like, oh, my baby's got the flu, I'm going to go to the ER. And that
or
is
– lack of family doctor too.
No? Yes. Yeah. And that's a separate thing as well. But this is a measured study that's just come out, and the one of the heads of the study was saying, well, this direct quote, the ER isn't ideal for people with mental health issues, because not only is it a busy place, I mean, I was unnerved by the presence, the amount of police and now security there since, to me, I don't recall security guards being there pre-shooting. They may have been there, but they were sort of in the woodwork. Now they seem to be kind of integrated into what's going on.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a sign that there's something else lacking in healthcare, and that you got some kid, and a lot of them were very young. Not to be critical of the very young, but there didn't seem to be any experience there in terms of what to do.
Right.
Trying to be integrated into the things that are actually healthcare, whereas they're just supposed to kind of watch people, right? So it was something to watch. I've been in the ER lots of times over the years, but that was phenomenal. And I don't know what the fix is. I mean, we can sit here and sort of come up with all kinds of options. I don't know if many of them would be right or correct, but my God, they need work.
For people who may have forgotten, you're referring to what happened last summer. I think it was July of last summer, where there was a young man who was shot 6 times by two police officers because he was threatening someone with a pair of scissors, which the SIU came back this week and cleared both officers of.
Yeah. By the time he was shot, he wasn't threatening anybody with scissors. The police seem to be afraid of scissors province-wide, Canada-wide. No, I'm serious, though. Like, it's
yeah.
I know it was a difficult situation, but
right.
6 bullets? Come on. That's opinion, folks. That's not any judgment on anybody, but...
Right, and the thing is, too,
that... Well, except the police, I suppose. Anyway.
The thing is, too, that it spoke to a lack of training there. That, somebody came over and asked for a pair of scissors, and they're just like, okay, yeah. Here you go.
That's where it all started to fall apart.
Right, because, he apparently wanted to cut his colonoscopy bag. There's something.
Yeah.
And so he goes into the bathroom, comes out, and he's been cutting himself. So it could have been solved with just, a memo saying don't give patients scissors. But
if it wasn't a fatal, it wouldn't matter.
No, but it does.
Could have been a pen, right?
Right, but there's something in the water. I don't know, maybe it's been here the whole time and we're just more aware of it. But if you think about Sammy Yateem in Toronto, someone who clearly had mental health issues and the police just seemed ill-equipped to handle. So that was somebody else who was...
Well, this is the problem is that they're equipped with guns. I'd said, we talked about this in the past, just close the doors of the streetcar and wait. What would happen?
Yeah.
How much more worse could it get, right? But the problem is, and it seems that there's some inroads being made with this, is that there's a test program going on, I don't remember where, I think it's in Durham, where a mental health professional goes along with the police. The police aren't dressed in cop clothes because the time I spent in the ER, most of the police that came were militarized police. And you know what I'm talking about. This is like SWAT team people.
Right.
There was 4 cops taking out this teeny tiny woman who was obviously in a complete fit. And that isn't going to help. There has to be a way. I spotted what I think was one psychiatrist there. I'm not even sure. I don't know if she was from the hospital or the Homewood. She was maxed out. So they, there are professionals there, but they don't seem to have the helpers, let's say. The sort of the other the ancillary people that handle all of the other stuff that aren't necessarily nurses, right? Mm-hmm. Or doctors. Because there only seemed to be one doctor the night I was there and a psychiatrist. But when it's so full of people, they need to come up with another channel. But the problem is the cuts in – part of it is the cuts in the community too, in that – because those services aren't there, people – and this was the phlebotomist was telling me, the blood work guy. Mm-hmm. Was it because there's so much cuts going on in the community that previous and current – in terms of, like I was saying earlier about young people, but it's probably all people who can't find a place to go, mm-hmm. they have to go to the ER. And considering the size of Guelph, the fact that we only have one working ER, whereas at one point we had two, St. Joe's had one before, right?
Yeah.
What happened? The place is getting bigger. Like, come on.
Yeah. And of course there is discussions right now at City Hall about how to fund an expansion of emergency and ambulatory care. The 2% levy for, I think it's for 5 years, for 10 years. But a lot of people just are, like, a lot of people are in favor of an expansion of the emergency room, not so much in favor of the levy. And
hire some administrators, you'll find some money.
Right.
In my view.
But still, there's, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if maybe you know, but the money for housing and taking care of mental health might be a county thing, or it's like one of those things that it's split between city and county, but it seems more like a county thing because a lot of homelessness is handled, well, all homelessness is handled through the county.
Yeah, and it is a multi-layered thing, and I think, you know, going back to the cuts again, when it started with Harris was doing the dumping down to as far down as municipalities. I'm not sure if that, you know, we're not in the business. I think was the exact quote was, "We're not in the business of like housing people or something." So that doesn't include just regular people that can't find a home, which is also at crisis levels. But when you've got somebody that's in a crisis and they can't find a space of any kind, you know, you've got double, triple the problem. So again, that's another angle to it too. But yeah, you're right. The county does handle housing in this area, which is a unique arrangement, and it sounds like there's been some steps made to improve that relationship. If the overtures by Mayor Guthrie are anything to go by, he seems happy that they're going to try and renew that relationship. And hopefully it will lead to things like, you know, housing for people that need it, among other things.
That's going to be a tricky relationship. Because of what happened under the last council and the last mayor. Because basically Guelph is the county. It's this isn't like Region of Waterloo where you have three huge municipalities each chipping in. And it's something seriously worth looking at. I kind of wish it was a bigger story because I think it touches on so many different things, and maybe that's why it's so hard to get action on it too. And of course there's other reports, and I found this one today about that says kids and teens with serious mental health issues are waiting up to a year for treatment from community health services, mm-hmm. health service centers. So it's a huge problem that just goes beyond our emergency room. And
because if your meds aren't working now, a year isn't going to do you any good.
Oh, exactly.
A day, you need a day or 2 days. Hopefully not waiting in the ER. So we're hoping in, you know, a couple months from now we can talk about this again. There's been some movement, so I hope so anyway. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah. We hope so. Speaking of movement, Syria seems to be relatively quiet these days because thanks to the efforts of Russia and the United States, there seems to be a ceasefire in place. Whether or not it's working may be a matter of debate. There was a report of, 31 violations of the ceasefire in the first 3 days of the agreement, although it's not enough to sort of bring the whole thing apart, and, you know, maybe just like skirmishes or, you know, random soldiers, firing in the wrong direction. So that seems to be progress. Of course, the ceasefire doesn't cover ISIS or Jabhat al-Nuria, which is the al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria. But there is hope for the first time in 5 years, over 5 years, that maybe Syria might know peace again. And in the meantime, it seems to be working, although that may be optimism.
It was somebody from the UN's comment was, well, it's success isn't really a guarantee, but it's visible. So that's a good sign. Although it sounds like it's it's really quiet there right now because they've had a massive power blackout. And they're not actually sure why. That was reported on the BBC just before we came to air that the, you know, not that the electrical is the most reliable thing there, but it's generally not too bad. But it sounds like it's out in lots of places. Not sure whether that's going to get restarted anytime soon. But yeah, the anytime there's a ceasefire, there's going to be, let's call them rogue elements. Well, we know ISIS is. They're kind of, they're the exemption, and al-Nusra or whoever else. But it sounds like there's 38 groups in agreement that, yeah, we're going to, this is going to hold. We can get help to people that need it. We can get resources and medical attention to people. Mm-hmm. And man, I tell you, I was reading a bit on the, it was actually on the MSF, Médecins Sans Frontières website, about the bombing of the hospitals. Like, I don't understand anybody. I mean, I would understand ISIS. If ISIS bombed a hospital, I'd say, well, that's ISIS. But
yeah,
when it's, you know, other parties bombing, this thing was like 12 destroyed and 82 damaged. And there's some kind of tactic against hospitals where they do this, they'll bomb it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a suicide bombing where there's two in a row. They call it a double tap, where they'll bomb it, wait till all the resources come, and then bomb it again. It's like,
yeah,
who does that? So hopefully, you know, all of that has stopped for now, or the majority of that has stopped. There are some skirmishes. People can get the medical attention they need. People can get the resources that they need. But it's just, it's still such a mess. And everybody, I think everybody's just kind of quietly hoping this, like, will this be it?
Yeah. That's, I mean, it seems weird, like, well, not weird, but it seems that people are anxious about what's going on there. Like, if you breathe on Syria the wrong way, it's back to civil war town, because they pushed back the permanent peace talks that are supposed to take place starting next Monday, but they pushed it back a couple of days to make sure it's holding. So and people are very, very antsy about making this work. And, of course, part of the reason why is the people fleeing the area. There's, you know, first of all, yay, Canada reached 25,000 refugee acceptance one day early. And it was supposed to be before March 1st, but it was like,
was
March
25,001?
It was, yeah, well, it
was, and the one was a baby, right? Guess was like, it's going to be a baby, sure enough.
Yeah.
It's a baby.
I mean, that's cutesy PR stuff. But I mean, the point is, they all, you know, we got them here. Although, you know, depending on your point of view, because I think it's like 15,000 government, 10,000 private, and it was supposed to be 25,000 government in total. But I mean, anyway, the point is they got here. Meanwhile, over in Europe, you have Macedonia using tear gas in one migrant camp. You have French police quite violently breaking up the jungle camp, which is this camp that Syrian migrants are staying at as they prepare to go through the channel to England. And that was kind of violently broken up. You still have people like bottlenecking in Greece. Greece is just, you know, having the worst time trying to handle these people. They're getting 2,000 people a day still. It's, apparently that's been coming down in the recent days since the ceasefire took effect, or whatever reason, maybe just travel conditions. But they're still getting 2,000 people a day. And this is a staggering number. Last year in Greece, they had 856,723 people arrive by sea. And that was the whole of 2015. So far in 2016, they have received 123,246. So, like, in the first 3 months, they're kind of like a quarter of the way there. Which,
yeah, I mean, that's the difference between Canada and the other places, in that the people that have come here are actually settlers, like that. And You'll hear people saying that, oh, this, you know, Canada has taken in the most. We've taken in the most permanent people in terms of, like, these, they're not in transition anymore. Mm-hmm. This group that have come, they land, they become Canadians almost right away. And this is the kind of, you're saying, yay, Canada. I mean, this is Canada getting its mojo back. Mm-hmm. Because you think about the past, and I don't mean the far past where there was, you know, let's say racist issues going on, like I had the boat in the St. Louis turned away the Jews. Post-war was a different story. It took people in from Hungary, taking people in that were fleeing Idi Amin in the 70s, right? Mm-hmm. Taking the boat people also in the 70s. You know, this when people think of Canada, this is the kind of thing they think of. And they've done it, even though it's a little bit late, you can point out and say they didn't keep their promise. I mean, they did, really. you know, they hit the number. And even though it is a public-private partnership, if you want to call it that.
It's a P3.
It's a P3. But it's a P3 I think people can get their heads around.
Yeah.
But I should just mention in all the hoopla or whatever that locally there's been a little bit of a glitch in terms of getting – there's a shortage of beds and bedroom items.
Yeah.
So, and I just wanted to put a shout out to the people there. If there's any way you can contribute to that effort, you can go to www.GuelphRefugeeForum.com. And if you have the resources, I myself was able to come across some stuff. And we actually went to Toronto just due to where it was situated. But it's like, it's the perfect thing. If you're getting rid of some stuff that's in good condition, it is very needed and you don't know where to put it, contact these people and they will find a home for it, because there are people needing that kind of stuff locally and all, you know, anywhere in the province you might be listening, or the country for that matter, because that's the settlements are going on countrywide, right? I've spread some of the Victoria, Peterborough, like places that you wouldn't, you just assume everybody goes to Toronto, Montreal or Vancouver, but the smaller places, and that includes Guelph. And I can't say I have heard any sort of really anti-resistance kind of stuff, like, oh, no, we don't want them to come.
No.
I didn't hear the tirade. It's the kind of thing you used to hear with somebody's like, they took our jobs kind of thing. But haven't heard that this time, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is. And, I think in a way the more difficult stuff is coming up now with trying to get them settled, trying to find them permanent places to live, jobs.
And in town, free bus pass, free...
Yeah. Language, yep. Getting people, you know, situated either English or French. That's kind of the tough stuff. And there is money. The federal government has set aside money for that. And they've only spent $522 million so far. So apparently they're so far under budget in terms of their timelines, which is...
My goodness, what comes in under budget?
Yeah, it's a term you rarely hear in government spending, is something coming in under budget. I said that kind of sarcastically, like, the Yay Canada. And, you know, there's every reason to be proud of what's been done. But on the other hand, you know, just thinking of the staggering numbers, like 123,000 new immigrants in Greece alone, mm-hmm. in Greece for the first 2 months of this year. That's, those are numbers that are really hard to get your head around. And it just shows... It's not over. I mean, yeah, we have a ceasefire in Syria. We've got 25,000 people here. But this isn't a done deal. This is a serious ongoing situation still.
No, and that's the problem, too, is when the resources are strained, as we've seen, that's when you get this resistance, and it can come from a pretty nasty place when you have the fascist kind of groups kind of wanting to get rid of, you know, no more refugees. Well, it doesn't even take fascists. It takes, you know, Donald Trump types. So we don't want them, you know. But in some ways that it's understandable if you're being overwhelmed and there doesn't seem to be any recourse going on. It's like, well, where do these people go? They can't stay where they are. And Calais too, there was the crackdown in that camp, mm-hmm. Cause they're sort of stranded there too. I think the goal was to get to Britain, but, to get to the UK somehow, but that isn't going to happen either. So.
No, nobody's made it through the channel. I mean, and that's an incredibly dangerous journey, in some ways more dangerous than trying to get across the few hundred miles of the Mediterranean going into the channel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's, you know, seeing what's happening in Europe, it's really quite staggering. The ferocity, when you see like tear gas being unleashed against
razor wire,
migrants, and, you know, when you see
fences,
riot,
and walls,
cops tearing down tents, there's something seriously wrong. And of course, you know, there's still the conspiracy theorists out there. There's reading somebody online saying that it's a conspiracy on the part of Russia and Syria to flood Europe with migrants and just tax their resources and cause collapse just because it's a hard time dealing with so many people. I mean, that's not an illegitimate concern, mm-hmm. I think, but at the same time, it's probably adding a level of shade that the situation doesn't need.
I think all we can hope for at this point is that the peace does hold and that, you know, certain things get sorted out. Although when you have somebody like Assad saying that, well, we're just going to take everything back anyway. I mean, he's very flippant about it, but, and then there's ISIS, but,
I think
they're working on that too.
Well,
let's hope it holds.
And yes, that's a good place to leave it on. That's all for this week's edition of Open Sources Guelph. You can stay connected to us all week long at opensourcesguelph.com. You can visit us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire. You can go to our Twitter feed at @OS_Guelph. And of course, you can download the podcast version of this and all episodes of the Guelph of Open Sources Guelph at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. And you can listen to it on whatever you listen to find podcasts on. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter or go to my blog, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Scotty Hertz on the Facebook, Scotty Hertz at bell.net. Just put my name into the search engine, you'll find me somewhere. And the blog, which I may add some things now, but time, you know what, you know what it's like, but... You can you read some of the bloggy greatest hits.
That is quite the Trumpian declaration. Time, you know what it's
time,
like.
Time, you know what it's like.
Stay tuned for DJ Sam's
coming
here
writer.
At the top of CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And unless you engage with us on social media in the next 7 days, be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources Guelph.
Engage.